Hello, it's Thursday, December 8th. I'm Bob McAllister, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times with me today is Lodi Evola. And we're going to start, as we always do, by taking a look at the photos on the front page of today's newspapers. And on the front page of the Hartford Courant is a picture that defies description, actually. It's a woman with long blonde hair with a very dour look on her face. Who was a survivor of the Sandy Hook shooting, and she is standing in front of a stained glass window with a wide variety of religious personages in the town of, they're in Washington, D.C. The other photos on the front page shows a number of police officers standing in a courtroom with a woman and her attorney, and a man in a white jumpsuit with a face mask on, who is the Christopher Francis Queenie, a story we'll probably have, who killed his 11-month-old daughter. The only other photo on the front page is a postage stamp size photo of Donald Trump at a microphone with a tuxedo and a black tie, standing in front of the flag of the United States. That's it for the photos from today's Hartford Courant. I'll turn over to Lodia now for the first story.
Okay, I'll be reading to you today primarily from the New York Times, which I have in front of me, and that has two pictures on the front page. The first one, which relates to our first story, is subtitled, "The German authorities conduct a series of raids on Wednesday seeking members of a suspected plot." And what we see is a man, there's a row of policemen across the back and in the front, and the highlight is one man carrying a green container, probably containing information, and he's masked and gloved carrying that out. And the other picture on the cover is of Aaron Judge, who has recently signed a huge contract with the Yankees. So our first story this morning, Germans thwart right-wing coup, top officials say, 25 arrested in raids. The plan was to storm the German capital, arrest lawmakers, and execute the chancellor. A prince descended from German nobility would take over as the new head of state, and a former far-right member of parliament would be put in charge of a national purge. To facilitate the coup, the electricity network would be sabotaged. Satellite phones to communicate off-grid had already been bought. That is what German prosecutors and intelligence officials say a nationwide far-right terrorist network was plotting before 3,000 police officers and special forces fanned out across the country on Wednesday to raid 150 homes and arrest 25 suspected co-conspirators. They included an active-duty soldier, a former officer in the elite special forces, a police officer, and at least two Army reservists. Among the items uncovered was a list containing 18 names of politicians considered enemies, possibly to be deported and executed. Among them, Chancellor Olaf Scholz, people familiar with the raids told the New York Times, requesting anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the investigation. This was the latest of a series of plots discovered in recent years of extremist networks preparing for a day the democratic order collapses, a day they call Day X, the subject of a New York Times podcast series last year. "This is not the first case of a cell like this planning for Day X," said Konstantin von Notz, a lawmaker and member of the Intelligence Oversight Committee in the German parliament. "The number of these cases are piling up, and the question is, to what extent are they connected? It is not clear how capable the plotters would have been at executing such an attack, nor how close they were to attempting to implement their plan." According to some intelligence officials, the group had twice missed dates when they had aimed to trigger their attack. But many of those arrested were known to be heavily armed, prosecutors said, describing the plot as possibly the most brazen in Germany's post-war history. Bob?
All right, continuing with the news from the Hartford Current. Classified files were found at a Trump site, says an insider. A new discovery has been made at the storage unit in Florida during a wider search. Former President Donald Trump hired people to search four properties after being directed by a federal judge to look harder for any classified material still in his possession. They found at least two documents with classified markings inside a sealed box in one of the locations, according to a person familiar with the matter. Trump's search team discovered the documents at a federally run storage site in West Palm Beach, Florida, the person said, prompting his lawyers to notify the Justice Department about them. The New York Times reported in October that Justice Department officials had told the former president's lawyers that they believed he might have more classified materials that were not returned in response to a subpoena issued in May. The FBI searched Mar-a-Lago, Trump's private club and residence in Florida, in August for additional classified documents and other presidential records. People close to Trump said earlier Wednesday that no classified material had been found during the searches, a claim that was later proved incorrect. The Washington Post first reported on the locating of the two additional documents, as well as the search of the properties. After the warning from the Justice Department, a debate ensued among Trump's lawyers about whether to bring an independent firm to conduct a search. The discovery of the documents at the storage unit maintained by the federal GSA, General Services Administration, came during a series of wider searches that were completed around Thanksgiving and conducted at Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, at Trump Tower in New York, and in the storage closet at Mar-a-Lago, according to two people familiar with the events. Stephen Chung, a spokesperson for Trump, said in a statement that the former president and his counsel continued to be cooperative and transparent despite the unprecedented, illegal, and unwarranted attack against President Trump and his family by the weaponized Department of Justice. The department is investigating the former president's handling of thousands of government documents, including more than 300 classified ones that were taken from the White House at the end of his term and found at Mar-a-Lago. Prosecutors are also seeking to determine whether Trump obstructed the government's repeated efforts to retrieve the materials. When the Justice Department warned that it believed Trump still had documents in his possession, a lawyer whom he had hired a short time earlier, Christopher Kies, suggested along with other lawyers working for Trump that they engage an outside firm, according to people familiar with the event. A cadre of other Trump lawyers were resistant to the idea, among them Boris Epstein, a communications advisor who has positioned himself as in-house counsel on some of Trump's legal entanglements. The dispute led to Kaiser's standing in Trump's circle diminishing for weeks, according to several people close to the former president. More recently, Chief Beryl Howell of U.S. District Court in Washington, who oversees grand jury investigations, directed Trump's lawyers to essentially search more carefully for any documents. Other lawyers in Trump's circle took the issue and hired a firm, according to one of the people familiar with the matter. Lodia?
Warnock's rise fueled by pain, faith, and flair. He likened voting to a prayer for the world we desire and called democracy, quote, the political enactment of a spiritual idea that everyone has a divine spark. He invoked the legacies of civil rights heroes and martyrs who fought and sometimes died for the right to vote, even as he promised to pursue bipartisanship in pressing his policy ambitions. Exulting in his victory Tuesday night, Senator Raphael Warnock showcased the dualities that have defined his career in public life. He is a man of deep faith, the senior pastor at the Atlanta Church where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached, and he is also a political tactician who has long believed that, quote, the church's work doesn't end at the church door. That's where it starts. I am Georgia, Mr. Warnock said after winning Tuesday's runoff election, nodding to both the hopeful and the dark aspects of the state's past. I am an example and an iteration of its history, of its pain and its promise, of the brutality and the possibility. He is also now poised, some Democrats say, to be a more prominent national figure as an ardent supporter of voting rights, a next-generation voice in the party, or, as Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey put it, a leader who can speak to, quote, a lot of the hurt in our country. I don't think America has fully discovered the leadership potential of Raphael Warnock, because he got elected and then was immediately in another election season, said Mr. Booker, who has worked with Mr. Warnock on legislative issues, including health equity matters, and who has campaigned for him. He has the ability to do both the poetry and the prose of politics in a way that I think is rare. Mr. Warnock, a son of Savannah Public Housing, who rose to become Georgia's first black senator, secured election on the strength of a strikingly broad coalition that reflected the party's greatest political ambitions, winning a full 6-year term after previously prevailing in a special election runoff. He won over young progressives on college campuses, and polling before the runoff showed black voters across the board. He performed strongly in Atlanta's racially and ethnically diverse suburbs and secured support from some Georgians who voted for Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, but split their ticket to back Mr. Warnock, reviving a crossover voting practice that some political observers had assumed was all but extinct. In significant part, that coalition was driven by opposition to Herschel Walker, the football legend nominated by the GOP and backed by Donald J. Trump, whose Senate campaign floundered in the face of a barrage of allegations concerning his personal conduct, especially with women. His candidacy left some Republicans publicly concerned and privately apoplectic. But Mr. Warnock, who blended his image as a social justice-minded pastor with a sense of humor and an emphasis on bipartisanship, also showed how a Georgia Democrat could win in a difficult political environment, even as every other statewide candidate in his party collapsed.
Another front page story from The Current. A Clean Slate Act rollout is scaled back prior to January 1st. A low-level marijuana possession conviction will be cleared, but about 250,000 people must wait. New Haven resident Mark Douglas loved going back to work at his job in the city. He worked his way up the ranks to a leadership position, but Douglas was never able to fully step into the leadership role as he was let go from the company on the same day he was promoted into the position in September. Through a background check, he said the company's human resources department said they found 2 misdemeanor charges, one for larceny and one for breach of peace, that he had acquired in the past, which is the reason they gave for letting him go. A silver lining, Douglas said the company gave him, is that if the Clean Slate Act were activated January 1st, he would be eligible to get his position back. Well, that was the intended date for him and more than 300,000 Connecticut residents to have their criminal records erased for misdemeanors and some felonies. The full implementation date has been pushed back until the second half of the year, which could be sometime in the summer months, according to Governor Ned Lamont. That means only cannabis possession convictions will be fully or partially erased in January, which are records in about 44,000 cases. General Assembly Judiciary Committee co-chair Senator Gary Whitfield, Democrat of New Haven, a prominent advocate for the Clean Slate Act, said that for many people this will be a letdown, especially for the individuals who will be impacted most by the delay. He said he is in conversations with the governor and his staff about issues impeding the implementation of the Clean Slate Act. Look, I live around some folks who have been some of the most stand-up people in the community, but maybe 20 or 30 years ago they did something, he said, and somebody got a piece of paper and found out about that day, and they think they know who that person is. Now, what I can tell you is that piece of paper does not reflect who that person is now. It doesn't reflect who they were 10 years ago, and you can't see it. Winfield said people think they're doing the right thing by not giving them housing, by not giving them a job, or not giving them a chance. They're doing exactly the wrong thing. They're taking the opportunity, not just for that person, but for our whole community. The reason for the Clean Slate Act was not just for them, it was for all of us so we can get back our community. Lamont said the delay is caused by Clean Slate automated erasure system needing significant information technology upgrades to allow criminal justice agencies to send and receive data to determine who can have their offenses erased and to update record systems. The state has spent more than $5 million to implement information technology upgrades for multiple state agencies. The information technology systems are complex and some are outdated, according to Lamont.
China loosens COVID restrictions after protests. Over the past 3 years, China's top leader, Xi Jinping, staked his legitimacy on, quote, zero COVID, making it an ideological campaign aimed at demonstrating the superiority of centralized control over democratic rule. He declared a people's war against the coronavirus that used lockdowns and quarantines to eliminate infections. In a remarkable pivot, the Chinese government announced a broad rollback of those rules on Wednesday, an implicit concession to public discontent after mass street protests in late November posed the most widespread challenge to the ruling Communist Party in decades. The party appears to be attempting a tactical face-saving retreat that would allow Mr. Xi to change back without acknowledging that widespread opposition and economic pain forced his hand. China's state media depicted Wednesday's move as a planned transition after Mr. Xi's zero-tolerance approach secured a victory over a virus that has now weakened. The move could very well assuage protesters, but the party is expected to confront a surge of infections as lockdown lifts, schools reopen, and people try to resume normal life. The government must now place much greater urgency on vaccinations, which had been neglected in recent months, experts say. The new policy takes aim at some of the most onerous and widely feared pandemic measures that reflect how intrusive the policy had become. Beijing largely did away on Wednesday with rules requiring mass testing, limited the scope of lockdowns, and scrapped mandatory hospitalization and mass quarantines. It also ordered pharmacies not to ban or control the sale of cold and flu medication, a policy enforced in some places to prevent residents from using over-the-counter drugs to reduce fevers and avoid detection. The changes, while not a complete dismantling of zero COVID, loosen measures that have dragged down the economy by disrupting daily life for hundreds of millions of people, forcing many small businesses to close and driving youth unemployment to a record high. The changes also try to alleviate public anger against the system of digital surveillance used to track and limit the movements of practically all people.